Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and with me this week, once again, the genteel giant himself, it's Brian. How you doing tonight, Brian?
Hey, I'm good, Scott. How you doing?
Excellent. Like I just said, excellent. The only thing I could do without some of the weird weather we've been having here, but I imagine that's happening all around the country in one form or another. We're getting blazing heat or torrential rain here.
That's pretty much here. It's nice for a day, then it rains, and it's humid, and rains, and rains, and rains. That's been the summer.
And then we just wait for, we get little warnings now that there are possible blackouts in certain areas and stuff, like they hit Manhattan over the weekend and stuff. So just the stuff we have to look forward to here in 2019. So we are back to talk about, of course, Legion. We have now reached chapter 23, which coincidentally is my favorite number. Now, does that mean that this was either of our favorite episodes so far this season? Listeners, you'll have to soon find out as we turn back the clock and we get ready to talk about the latest episode of Legion. So yeah, I just try to get right to it there, because you know, I know we're running behind on time here. Behind on time, haha, how funny to say that. Because tick-tock, tick-tock, we get our timey-wimey on and then some with this installment, don't we? Basically, David's forays into the past with Switch, the little time-traveling girl there, have unleashed those creepy things that were hinted at in the hallway of time. For better or for worse, we're calling them time demons. They wreak havoc with both the House of David, I love that, just came up, as well as Division 3, especially affecting Sid and Lenny in the most deeply emotional ways. And in the midst of the time-munching chaos, Carrie Loudermilk arises from his David and drug-induced sense of sycophantic euphoria to realize the treachery that has kept him there, and he escapes with Switch. By the way, I only wish David had grown a pair of Bugs Bunny-sized rabbit ears and maybe wagged a Groucho-sized cigar at the end there. And I wish he could have looked into the camera and said, "Of course, you know, this means war." So that's my little synopsis. Let's talk about what I think I can safely assume, safely guess, safely believe was the most riveting episode of the season so far. That's not giving away whether it was our favorite yet. So I actually have no idea how you felt about this episode. I know how I felt about it.
I really enjoyed it.
It was, if nothing else, definitely the most suspenseful episode of the season. I think we can easily say that.
Yeah, and to sort of play off that, I mean, just what I saw in the Time Demons and how things went. I mean, like this sort of device of the way the Time Demons were cut and stuff, it's probably the most interesting sort of visual presentation of something similar to that of the Weeping Angels in Doctor Who. Which, you know, my kid and I watched Doctor Who, and like to this day, like that freaked him the F out. And, you know, if he sees like a creepy statue, he doesn't like it. But that sort of the quick cuts where, you know, the demons would move. So I thought it was interesting. And you had the palette of, you know, Farouk and his team going to the sort of silent movie section of the episode. I really, really enjoyed this episode of Legion quite a bit.
Yeah, it was interesting because there's so many different ways it worked. Like what you just mentioned, a show that is already, at the very least, one of the more unique shows when it comes to their visual and even audio representation of how, you know, whether it be cinematography or how they use film or whatever. What they do with those time demons, especially when they first seem to appear, because when they first appear, it was very almost Babadook-like. If for anyone who's seen the movie The Babadook, good movie, check it out. They're a little reminiscent of that, because the way they were just moving that frame by frame, almost stop motion style. So, and I guess the way one's eyes and brain can interpret it, it's like they're moving in between units of time. You know, it's like between the ticks of a second hand or something highfalutin like that. The part you were talking about with Farouk, you know, that made me think of, and it's the way it was was the type of photography, the way, and the exposure level. It looked like we were watching a family vacation slideshow. And, you know, just the way, and just even the way the shots were composed, whatever. I mean, if not for what was actually happening in the frames, which I guess was Farouk, was it Kerry and Clark? I think that was the trio that was off searching for the nest of time demons.
Yes.
Again, it was a very interesting, I hate saying interesting, it's like the worst word to use, I think. It's something I hadn't quite seen before.
And I think, you know, whenever anything captures elements of time travel, you and I have talked about this before, you have to sort of set out the rules and you have to tell the audience, like, these are the rules we're going to play by. Mm-hmm. And I thought this episode really did a very good job in a simplistic way of dealing with time that didn't, like, bend your brain a la Dark, or, you know, make you question things about all these alternative timelines and things. It just basically set up the conceit that if you do this enough, you waken this creature that then begins to eat time and threatens the fabric of reality. And I thought it was a really sort of novel take on time travel and the consequences of it that aren't you destroying your own timeline, but you opening the door to something else that destroys your own timeline, and
right,
and using that as the device to sort of show it. And, you know, those things, I mean, I thought the composition of the time demons, you know, to sort of have the fuzzy body and then they'd get up close and you would sort of see like the John Wayne Gacy clown sort of mouth with big teeth. They were both sort of comical and really creepy, and had a sense of menace in that they could disappear and then cover a distance and appear in front of you like the Weeping Angels in Doctor Who. And I mean, I loved it. I thought the visual styles were great. The tension was great. How they explained time travel. I mean, it was really probably the most I was glued to my TV of any episode this season, because I really had no idea where they were going with it.
Right, right. Also interesting to, in at least in this one episode, whereas we're used to it being, you know, the opposing sides of, oh Lord, sorry about that. Whichever side David happens to be on at the time, whichever side Farouk happens to be on at the time, you know, depending on what season we're talking about, this was actually a different antagonist, technically, because it was attacking both of them, even though it is, you know, to whatever extent, David's fault, or because of what he was forcing Switch to do. As getting back to the actual look of the time demons, I mentioned when they were first on camera, where these just, when all we can make out was just these shadows, you know, with maybe and a slight hint of eyes or something. And I referred to the Babadook. Then, as you were saying, once we got a better look at them, or at least as much of a look as we were allowed to see, because there's always that slight blur to them. But when we could see those weird grins and those eyes and you know, certain textures, good Lord. If they didn't look more like blue meanies than anything I've seen in some time, that's what I was thinking. And the fact that they would even have this occasional, especially in the first half of the episode, accompanied by these giggles on the soundtrack, I was just waiting to hear Yellow Submarine at some point in this episode or something like that, which really would fit in with the whole feel of what they've done with David and his little cult thing, having that late 60s, early 70s kind of feel anyway. It's interesting because so many, as you were just saying, so many things we've watched or read and all the different ways time can get screwy and what can go wrong, this was, you know, a different way. This was something, again, where there has been that conceit of there being some sort of creatures or guards or demons or whatever in the time stream trying to set things right or correct. This was a different way. These seem more malevolent. It was almost like, so instead of like guarding time, you kind of released them and they were going to be the ones that were going to be, as you were saying, like disrupting the fabric of the time-space continuum themselves by literally eating time, which was quite something.
Yeah, I get the sense watching this, and this episode really brought it home, and I think, not to speak for you, but I think you felt this way too. Especially after this episode, I feel like Holly's hand is really back on this season, and there's really a level of attention and detail and craft that not was totally lacking last year, but you can tell the difference. I feel like there's definitely a creative vision and storytelling that's more focused and tells more engrossing, different stories that were told last year. And I feel like, you know, to sort of, not to, you know, step on the my final opinion, but I think you can tell where I'm going. I really, really now want to know what happens next. I thought it was wonderful. And I know there's one part in particular. I'll set you up so you can. I know you love the shield. So one of the sort of reset time resets was an iconic clip. So why don't you tell the listeners what you felt about that? And the floor is yours.
Well, yeah, the shield is absolutely one of my favorite television series, and I would say, you know, considering its entire run, possibly the best series FX dramatic series FX has ever done. I mean, you know, Fargo's impressive, this has been impressive, but you know, The Shield, pound for pound, the best one. So I was talking about this earlier this week, actually online on Facebook, and one of the many threads that I post for the show, for Legion, and then one of the groups, fellow who's also in our group, I don't know if he listens, we'll find out if he hears this, Brad on Facebook, he had said that he thought it was there to really make the audience feel disoriented, much like the people in the show itself. And there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, there is something very weird and disorienting to the viewer, and that kind of pops up out of nowhere. Because for a moment there, you're thinking, wait, is this an ad for rerunning The Shield or something? But you're looking at the corner of the screen like, no, I think this is part of the show. What's going on here? So I watched it, and I gave it some thought. I mean, first off, it's a joke. I mean, it's definitely to imply that the time loop that's been affecting different characters on the series has now actually affected FX. So suddenly the network is showing it a show in an episode from 17 years ago. But, you know, it was so funny because I was even trying to remember, because it's funny because this year Legion is on Mondays, but in the past it's either been on Wednesdays or Tuesdays, depending what season it was, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about it, but I have this recollection it was on Tuesdays. They might have switched it to Wednesdays at one point, but I do. A lot of times FX would always have their big shows on Tuesdays for a while. Because I went back in time to look when that episode ran, you know, and it was on a Tuesday. So I was trying to figure out, you know, if possibly, you know, there was a very, they tied it in, but I don't know if when they were working on this season that they knew they were going to be airing on Mondays as opposed to Tuesdays. So anyway, I'm getting off track. I thought there was a much more, and I'm going to take this to an extreme, another reason why they chose The Shield. Because I started to look at the parallels between The Shield and specifically the main characters, Vic Mackey and Legion's David Haller. At this point in Legion, where we are today, and where The Shield was pretty much from the get-go, we're focusing on bad guys who believe they're good. Two characters who both believe the ends justify the means. That's the methodology for what their actions are. They both have a small number of, let's say they're virtual acolytes who believe that they can do no wrong. There are always these other figures of authority who are trying everything to bring them down. They tend to be in something of a serious state of delusion or denial about their own morality and, you know, who they are. I don't want to say too much more about that as far as the Shield is concerned, because anyone who hasn't seen the series, I would encourage you to see it. I don't want to spoil what happens in the final season of that show, although great final season. But I just kept thinking there's so many more reasons why they did that. So that's why they would use a show like, say, The Shield. Then, you know, they could use Hawley's other show, Fargo, quite frankly. Or they could have, you know, or a million, they could have been silly. It could have been Nip Tuck, you know. there's a lot of ways they could have went with it. I think there's a very deliberate reason why they chose The Shield. I mean, they could have picked Sons of Anarchy. Oh, God. But, this is what they
Montage.
Oh, it could have been Katie Sagal singing for, like, 20 minutes. But yeah, I got a huge kick out of that, and one of the things that we'll be talking about for the rest of this podcast is the different ways that time affected certain characters. That was kind of time affecting the show and the network itself, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that analysis. I also sort of thought, I mean, if you want to be super meta, and I think Holly is sometimes super meta, it is. It's also a commentary, I think, on the comic book trope. And I think if you look through comic books, and because Legion is tied to X-Men, I mean, oftentimes it's Magneto is the one that is evil, ultimately evil, because he believes what he's doing is right. But he'll also sort of call out, you know, Charles Xavier on his simplistic view of the world. Mm-hmm. In that his view of the world is one way, that it can't always be that way. And I think, you know, that line Mackie uses, you know, I'm not the good guy, good cop or bad cop, I'm the other cop. I mean, that's such a great line. But it also, I also wonder if it's preparing us that, like, you know, the end of this show isn't going to be good wins, bad wins. It's going to be something else. And if it's that meta to say that when there's a character like David and with his powers and what he's unleashed, is the ending going to basically be a complete subversion of all those tropes? And maybe that's where we're headed. So it works. I mean, that's the beauty of it. Like you said, I think obviously it was done with intention, and it works on multiple levels. So we'll see where it goes. But I loved it. I love The Shield. You love The Shield. And what'll be really interesting, as you said, I'm not going to spoil it either. It'll be really interesting to see, based on where The Shield ended, to see if there's some similarity to that for our character. So,
right, and they, in a way they've actually already sort of gone there to a certain extent,
right?
Because in this, I don't consider this much of a spoiler. So for The Shield, so don't worry. When I've talked about a lot of television series over the last 15-20 years, a lot of them tend to be set up with, you know, a main character and a very strong supporting lead that's, you know, not quite the main character. You know, definitely there's definitely a lead, but, you know, probably, you know, like, you know, number one and number one A, so to speak. But at some point, when we get to the final act of that series, those two characters will be in opposition to each other.
Right.
And it happened up until they changed it. It happened on The Americans. It happened in Breaking Bad. It happened on The Shield. It happened in many, you know, and we're talking about shows where they weren't set up from the beginning as antagonists and protagonists. If they are like that, sometimes, you know, and if they are, it's usually kind of almost like they're brothers, you know, so you could see them being allies, but, and yet they're always going to have to return to being opposing each other, which would be the case with a show like Justified. But those are like the really strong shows that usually have a strong final season tend to do that. And they've, even though it's only going to be three seasons, technically that's what they've done with Legion. Because it's David and Sid. It's not David and Farouk. It's David and Sid who are in opposition to each other here. At least that's the way I view it, at least. So I kind of feel like they've kind of turned the table, and that's where they've been going with this show as well. It remains to be seen if this show ends in as satisfying a way as all those other shows I just mentioned, which is the other thing they all have in common. They all ended well. Let's see. We'll see if Legion does. Kind of like what you were saying. If I agree, if there was a show and a writer and a creator behind the show, that's going to be more likely to subvert the tropes and expectations and where we think things would be going with something. Holly would be the guy to do it. So curious to see where they go with it.
And you saying that has now awakened in my mind the idea that Rachel Keller is, I guess, Noah Hawley's Walton Goggins, possibly. So, for Walton Goggins was FX's go-to 1B guy, Justified and The Shield had quite a run as sort of the lead supporting character for their shows and I think there it will be it'll be intriguing to see what happens going forward from there. So, I loved it, thought it was great.
So, speaking of Rachel Hunter, the actress who plays Sid, that's one of the two, I guess we call them storylines in or pieces of this episode that, beyond the visual and beyond the coolness factor, where there's actually there's some emotion there, and they plumb a little bit deeper character-wise. Because due to the nature of what the Time Demon is doing and bringing things together, she ends up encountering her own 15-year-old self. That's a really strong little scene there. And even though we might have felt we already had gotten enough about Sid and her backstory, and we know what she did when she was in a teenager, as far as her mother and her mother's boyfriend, that whole story. We realize there's more to it, and it's not just that, it's the way she exists and what that power really means to her, and how she kind of views it as something akin to, like, whenever she does it is used, it is, she does feel like it's an assault upon herself. I didn't write down what she said, which was dumb of me because it was very striking. I do recall that, but it was she was referring to the sensation and the feeling of someone else having been basically inside her body, inside her, well, and then everything, even right down to the smell of it, whatever.
Yeah, it was really a powerful it was a powerful discussion of, I think, sort of the way they've dealt with sexual assault in using sort of David's invasion of her mind and doing it. And I thought I did think it was an interesting choice that the time demon appeared looming over her, like right up in her face, in the sort of position that sort of thing would happen, and her talk about this with herself. I thought when it first happened, I thought, I wonder where this is going. I found it to be very tender, and it dispensed with a lot of the usual dopiness of, oh, you can't be me. It went right into both of them sort of instinctively knowing who the other was and talking about it. And then it used another one of the time things that we see, that if you ever meet your doppelganger, you can't touch them or the fabric of time can unravel or whatever. And I thought it was really sweet to say, can I give you a hug? And I really thought it was a great bit of acting by both the actor that played younger Sid and Sid.
I mean, any character wanting to hug him or herself would be significant, but it being her, like that's like a hundred. It's multiplied by 100 because of her inability to really come into physical contact with anybody, even with the gloves. Because she does make a point of, like, touching her arm and then such. I was really moved by it, and I thought, in its own way, it kind of was. It made me feel sadder than that Sid focused episode did from last season. And that's not knocking that episode at all. You know, I thought it was well done. I liked it. But I thought maybe it's because there was a certain poignancy here, whereas that was just telling me a story that I already knew.
Right.
This is, you know, this is a chance of someone, like, talking, you know, talking to her younger self about, you know, what she is and where she's been. And yeah, I was impressed that they did step around or just simply ignore all the usual kind of stuff we would have come to expect, you know, as far as someone meeting a younger version, which, you know, we've seen versions of that many, many times. So I thought it was a very unique take on that.
It was, and it's the classic, if you could go back and tell yourself, like, what would you want? This was more like, if when you're 15, what would you want to know about your life? And it handled it in a very even-handed way, and that Sid didn't say everything is great and everything's going to be wonderful, but she also didn't say, like, my life is terrible. And I thought the way she talked about, like, you will know love, but it doesn't end well. And it really brought a kind of nuance and treated her talking to a 15-year-old version of herself or didn't try to paint a rosy or a unflattering picture, but just sort of played it straight. And I found that refreshing, and I found that the intimacy, I mean, Sid's problem is when you can't touch anyone, there's a denial of a certain kind of intimacy, and both those characters get some intimacy, and it's sort of the coming to terms with myself and hugging myself and knowing it's telling myself it's going to be okay. And I found it really moving.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And just to go one step further on that, Dr. Phil Light wrote, it's about loving yourself, and, you know, which David is doing way too much of, it seems, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe Sid could use that. By the way, a silly point, but because it's Sid-related, I just wanted to get it out of the way now. Clearly it wasn't. Even at the time, I knew it wasn't. I could see. I'm watching the TV. I see what the image is in front of me. But there was a slight moment, not even a moment, a couple seconds in a row, perhaps. That part where, I guess it was the time demon, when that arm comes stretching through the portal and Farouk slices it off, so, like, the arm just falls off. There was a little part of me like, hey, any chance it could be future Sid's arm? And finally we get an explanation for Sid's missing arm that we've kind of forgotten about, that we kept seeing from season two. It's still bothering me, I'm sorry. still waiting for the explanation. Anyway, getting back onto more important things. Speaking of sad, an unexpected sad. Can we talk about the Breakfast Queen? And by the way, love the nickname, alias, whatever you want to call it, Breakfast Queen. Lenny,
yeah.
What she goes through. Okay, bunch of things here. First of all, let me ask you. So she's apparently with this, one of the little hippie chicks there. I think they say her name is Gabrielle, maybe? I did not
it's
write
it. Something like that. Something like that. I didn't write it down.
Well, she's clearly pregnant. Should we be assuming that she was impregnated by you know who, or are we not supposed to think that?
You know, it completely ignores it in a way that I don't think we're supposed to care. And you think we are?
You know what? I get that we're not supposed to care in the sense that we're just. I think it's unfortunate that maybe that it's possible some viewers, and I'm going to say a small segment of them, might be giving David more of a free pass than he deserves. And this has been going on since last season. Because the way we see him interacting more with his, again, they're a cult, whatever, and the vast majority of them are female. There are some guys there, definitely are. but they're mostly female and generally very young, and they're calling him daddy.
In the creepiest way possible.
In the creepiest way possible. It's a little. It's one of those things. I think it's not. It's not ever at this point. It's not. Nothing is going to be shown to us specifically, but I feel it. The hints are there. I feel like the hints are there. And again, also let's be honest. If we're going to look at what he's doing as something that's a cult, that's a cult, that kind of comes part of the territory too. Whenever you hear about the leaders of the cult and all the things they do, one of the things they also tend to do is they tend to have sexual congress with most of their ladies. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, again, we won't see that. And maybe David does it in his own little, you know, weird mental space way to put himself above it all. But the fact is, this woman is pregnant.
Well, there was the scene. I mean, there are brushes. There are faint brushes of it. There is the scene where he walks back into the house and all of the women, like, flock around him in a group hug. And he, like, sort of psychically pushes them all away. And the way they all approach him is not like a daughter lovingly hugging their father after he's returned from a business trip. It's, and then the way they follow that up by the way they say daddy, I mean, that the thing that was as creepy as the time demons. And so I think there are the brushes there that's a component of this because of David's search for love and not being able. I mean, what's the one thing he couldn't actually do with Sid? He'd have to create a space to go do that because he couldn't touch her.
Right.
So what's the one thing, you know, he could do with these women? And then it's that. And
so he's immersing himself in it now in a way, even if we're not seeing that specifically, I think the implication is there. Yeah, like you said, and you know, this has been going on. I almost am tempted just to keep going down the David route, but there's so much to say there. But I think I want to switch back to Lenny and then finish this talk because David's where I think we should end with this.
Yeah,
conversation. The thing with Lenny was getting back to her and her her pregnant little gal, because Lenny is becoming a more interesting character as with each successive episode, when you realize there's more to her now, and that she wants out of this, that she just wants to get, you know, she doesn't want to be the right hand man, lackey, whatever anymore. But maybe it's just me, and this goes all the way back to the very first episode where she, you know, technically Lenny is killed off, whatever. This is the first time I've ever felt real sympathy for her.
There's an interesting contrast in that as David becomes less human and sort of more monstery, Lenny's character has become less of the monster and more human.
Yes.
And it's almost like their energy is always completely inverse to one another. And in this, I mean, I mean, it's kind of shocking. You would have never believed you'd hear, like, say, let's just move away and move to the suburbs and raise our kid. And I thought there was a poignancy to that was unexpected.
Right. I mean, it's still Lenny when it gets, but at the end of the day, I mean, when she wants to name her kid, what is it, like Violence Lollipop Busker or something?
Yeah.
Like that? Great name. But when what the time demons end up doing to her is that she basically goes through the entire lifetime and death of her daughter. You know, it's like that beginning of Up on steroids kind of a thing. Or like that Star Trek episode with Jean-Luc Picard lives an entire lifetime and what kind of a thing. And what really makes it work, I mean, it works throughout with the visuals and switching from, you know, ping, ping, ping. And Aubrey Plaza really is being given yet a new set of tools to play with in this episode that we might not have gotten to see her do before on this show. it's the end, I think, that really is what got me. I mean, I didn't get teary, and I'm an easy cry, so it wasn't. I'm not going to go that extreme, but it made me go, "Ooh, that's significant for her." When David offers to help her, and she says no, she wants to feel it. She wants to remember what happened, and whatever. And that's not something we would have expected from that character before this. So yeah, I think your inverse comparison or theory, whatever, is spot on. Absolutely, because think of how monstrous she was. Obviously, when she was with Farouk using her as a puppet, of course she was. But even last season, when she was still trying to get out from Farouk's clutches, but still doing his bidding, not the greatest person. But yeah, it's an interesting tack to take, and it makes the character something different than she was before, even over the course of the season. So I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, the battle of humanity within Lenny and David in this episode was in stark contrast, and David wants it all. Lenny is happy with one girl and one possible future, and sees that future play out and doesn't want to forget. David wants to erase mine so they forget and start over. And, you know, given the opportunity, Lenny doesn't want to do what David did and erase it and start over. So I thought it was really surprising, and sort of like you, I didn't tear up, but it did get me in the feels a little bit in a way that was unexpected.
Right, exactly. Just made me kind of go, wow. This is not related to anything, but I have nowhere else I'm going to pop this thought in, but I saw my note on it. I just had to mention it. When the demons, the time demons, and their brief little encounters or encounter with Carrie, did they imply that one of the time demons essentially took a dump on his chair, or was I just imagining
that? I didn't know what that meant. I didn't rewatch it, but there was a bizarre encounter. I mean, with Carrie, the whole thing with Carrie seemed less menacing, and his reaction to the time demons until he's back on the Zeppelin. It seems to be less menacing until Switch cues him in. He's just sort of bebopping along, clueless, when everybody else is running and hiding. And there seemed to be a lightness surrounding his interaction with them. So yes, that wouldn't surprise me that the tone was a little different for their dealings with him.
Well, it's almost like they were deliberately just wanting to undercut David. And yeah. So just basically essentially releasing him from the spell, so to speak, that he was in, as opposed to keeping David in his little, because I mean they do a lot to try to screw with David. I mean, there's that little unending time loop that he keeps going in. There's the encounter with his mother in the we'll call it a concentration camp or prison kind of thing, which we know is not the real thing, I do find myself finding, and because they are really making David into, I mean, there is no way to root for David at this point for me. I can't really root for him. He has kind of become the villain of the piece. I don't know if there's going to be a path for redemption for that character. I don't know if there should be a path for redemption for his character.
Right.
Because there are lines throughout this episode which are troubling, but it goes to his own self-aggrandizement, you know, his delusions, and also just how his ego and it are just out of control. You know, I mean, when he refers to himself as I am the Alpha and the Omega, and he's basically speaking as God here. Or right. when people are concerned about all these things happening, he keeps going, "This is not about the world. This is about me," you know. And everything he's been saying over and over about, you know, not just about being like a god, but about being loved, you know, which is one of those things that's supposed to, you know, it's supposed to be what fuels gods, that the way that they're loved by others or something. It's very troubling. His megalomania is really. If I hadn't if I haven't been doing a rewatch of earlier seasons very recently, David season one seems very, very far away right now.
And you know, the sort of arrogance toward at the end where he finally gets to the point where he just destroys time, like he destroys the time demons. And you know, if there's one thing we know, that in the whatever universe a creator makes, that everything exists for a reason, and taking something out of it or messing with it brings a dangerous consequence to the balance of things. And certainly when gods go to war, everyone suffers, and David doesn't see that. And he's already opened this, and now he basically declared war on the time demons and destroyed one and then threatened them in a way that you know, it's bad enough. All the human beings know what David can do to them, but he basically destroyed a god and told the gods, "I'm coming for you and I'm going to kill you." And the hubris and the sheer audacity of that, and seeing that he's willing to do that and is going to do that, is troubling. And that also goes to, I think, maybe the thing that's bothered me the most in this episode, other than Daddy, which is creepy, but the way in which, like, he just absolutely gives one crap about Switch, and you see he now just simply wants her as a tool. It doesn't matter if all her teeth are falling out and the strain on her, he just doesn't care. Like, he is about what he wants and nothing else.
Right. I don't know if I'd be as troubled about him killing one of the time demons, which he absolutely does, which is more about him asserting that because up until he does that, it appears like the time demons have one up on him, that he's unable to get out of the time loop, that they're screwing around with him, that they're popping him here. You know, it's almost like they're impish in how they're treating him. And although, albeit more torturous than a couple other characters. I think that's just David asserting, like, yeah, I'm the dominant species here. This is, you know, as he says, this is my time. I think he means that quite literally, you know?
Yeah.
So he kind of scared, and what he does by killing the one, he scares the rest of them off. They go, and that's why they abandon, you know, Division 3, and they get away from where, the little family vacation thing that Farouk and the guys are on, whatever. But I don't know how much more, if at all, we're going to see the time demons. I guess we might see them one other time if they do a little twisty thing towards the end. But beyond that, I don't know if we're going to be playing with them much anymore. His war is with Division 3. And,
yes.
And because obviously this is coming down to a showdown between him and Farouk. As Farouk being the main tool Division 3 has to use against him more than anyone else. By the way, and with that said, am I the only one who still continues to be troubled that or worried whenever Division 3 people trust Farouk?
Oh, no.
Because I still don't, I wouldn't trust him if I were you. You know? Oh,
no,
Lord.
No, it's, you know, it's the drug dealer informing on the other drug dealer, so he goes to prison, so then the coroner's yours. That's you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Burke's jam.
Exactly. It's like you see on an episode of The Shield. Hey!
Exactly.
It all comes together. A couple of silly things from the very beginning of the episode I didn't get a chance to touch on. There's something kind of nice about Carrie at the beginning. Remember fun?
Yeah.
Which, for some reason, I don't know why, what popped in my head when she was saying that, it reminded me of that line from the Led Zeppelin song, "Does anybody remember laughter?" And then I was thinking, hey, they're on this aircraft, which I thought was just simply an airplane, but Sid refers to a couple times as being some form of a Zeppelin. So I was like, oh, wait a minute, maybe that's deliberate. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of funny that all the I don't know if they're Vermilions or they're just the Vermilion. You know what I'm talking about, the android chicks. Notice that all their mustaches are all very thick and lustrous, but I guess they're giving Tanami a mustache, and his really is. His is not, his isn't remotely as cool as theirs.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did think it was funny. I thought it was funny, and I don't know if it was a joke. I'm assuming it was sort of a joke. I did think it was funny that the way to get Tanami, like, sort of was that they turn him on and then back off, like, you know, the classic thing about, oh, well, your TV or your computer doesn't work, well, just try turning it off and turning it back on again, right. And Carrie just reboots him, and then he starts doing the what he does and does his calculations, but it was just funny, he's trapped and they just turn him on and back off. And I love the scene with Carrie. I love the phone booth and sort of going back to sort of the gadgety wizardry of Carrie and sort of how the gadgets and things work in this show. And I think that sort of was reminiscent more of season one and the things we liked. So maybe that was another reason I enjoyed the episode so much, but
right.
You know, there's humor there, but it is being meta and it is leading towards a dark conclusion.
Right. I mean, at this point, it was an interesting episode because, in a way, like, I could just take this episode and show it to someone who hasn't really watched Legion. It's like, hey, you'll probably enjoy this. And in a matter of speaking, it's very self-contained because mm-hmm. it's, you know, so-and-so has happened, and now these time demons have been released, and this is everyone encountering them and dealing with them and how they fight them and whatever. I mean, there is progression as far as the overall storyline is concerned. You know, obviously Carrie taking away Switch and David kind of taking that act as his reason to essentially declare war. So next episode should be very interesting to see where they go with that, because if he's going to declare war, really there should only be one more episode left. But, you know, like counting how many episodes, like, no, I think there's 5 or 6 more episodes. I'm not sure. So we'll see if they're going to drag them. Or maybe we'll get John Hamm doing a PSA again. I don't know. I don't know. I watched the first 4. I'm still liking it. I'm trying to remember at what point I started not liking it. But anyway.
If I remember, it was about 5 or 6 is when it got tedious.
Yeah, it was like going one too far. But again, as I've been rewatching season 2, I've actually been enjoying it more than I recalled. So, but maybe I just haven't hit that point where I'd be like, oh yeah, this is where I started getting annoyed with it. I just started being like, all right, get on with it. So that's the only issue I might have with the Legion. And it's a very minor one because I get so absorbed in so many other things, which I know tend to be surface things. You know, it's the look of it, it's the sound of it, it's the little winks at the camera and winks at just the viewer, you know, little Easter egg things here, there, and everywhere. But sometimes I kind of wish they would get the story moving in a faster way at times. But I am enjoying the season a lot. I'll say it, this was probably my favorite episode of the season so far.
Me too.
I just found it very satisfying. That isn't to say there've been great moments in other episodes and things like that, but this one just from top to bottom, and maybe it's because I was like, oh, I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, if you told me they were going to kill one of the main characters by the end of this episode, I would have believed it. You know, I had no idea where they were going with the different time aspects and the fact that they kind of studiously avoided some of the more cliches I was expecting them to do, really spoke well of it. And, you know, I got my time travel on, I got my little Groundhog Day-like moments on a little bit. You know, I've been enjoying this very much. It was great. Even the song at the end, which I don't know if it was Holly and the gang doing another one of their covers. It probably was. I feel whenever you don't know who it is doing a cover, you know, a version of a song, it's probably Noah Hawley and the guy he collaborates with doing a cover. And they cover an REM song, actually. And I was recognizing the lyrics, and I was like, what is this? And all of a sudden I recognized what the song was. Like, oh, that's like a really old REM song, but being sung in a totally different and unique way. Much the way they just presented time travel has been presented. And, you know, in a totally different and unique way. So kudos to them.
Yes, and I believe you're of the same sort of general music taste as me, and that's something the kids probably wouldn't have recognized, but at the time that was, you know, before, that was a song from before REM was huge, and we're sort of still, you know, on IRS Records, an underground band, and I wouldn't say underground, but not yet mainstream.
Yeah, that was when they were like a college band before they really broke through. Yeah,
they were on college radio, and you know, I remember being of that age, and I heard that, and I was like, "Oh, wow, that's an interesting pull." It really interesting choice to end the episode too for that song.
Yeah. So, chapter 23 did well for its number. I said that was one of my favorite numbers, and it turned out to be one of my favorite episodes. Sounds like it was one of your favorites as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we are definitely looking forward to where the rest of the season goes, including next week, which is when we'll be back talking about Legion. By the way, since it's been brought up on the podcast for the handful of people who are waiting for it, I did finally make some headway in my rewatch of Dark. Finally. I got past, I actually knocked off 4.5 episodes last night. So I'm more than halfway through my rewatch. And once you get to a certain point, the rewatch is easier. Because I start remembering things. But now I want to continue to watch it because there's things I don't remember. I'm like, I want to like get my brain all infused with all the information before I start season two. So we will do a season two Dark podcast. I will watch it, I swear to God.
And it does handle time a little differently than Legion.
Yes, I haven't gotten to the part in season one where he goes like, "But how did a dog get through the door? That doesn't make any sense." Anyway, let it go. All right, so back to Legion, back to this podcast. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page on Facebook. Like the page and join the conversation about Legion and some of the other shows and whatever the heck else you want to talk about there. You can also find us on the iTunes. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast, or probably Serious TV Drama would find us. I don't know. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. Hell, if you just type Serious TV Drama Podcast into Google, you'll find us in 18 other places, which I don't know why or how they're there. We're on YouTube all the time and with no views. I don't. You know, why wouldn't you want to go to YouTube to listen to something? And finally, you can also catch us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Last week, we were actually posting something every single day. Probably the first time since we've had Twitter we did that. We didn't do it this week, though. So you never know. Sometimes we might be posting like TV recommendations for the night, or some snarky comment about something, or just reminding you to watch Legion or something. I don't know. But it's worth following us just because our numbers suck. Anyway, so that's about it for me. Brian, once again, I thank you for joining us. At a certain point, I almost want to say, and joining me tonight, as always, just because it'll be a joke for the people who like, are wondering where Dan is, and Dan's running gag of how you basically, you know, usurped his position here or something.
Well, there's no replacing Dan, but I have to say I am glad at the beginning of the season you weren't sure you wanted to stick with this show, and I know I've been more positive on it than you or Dan were after season two. And I'm glad that it has sort of redeemed itself and you're back in the saddle. And I'm glad we've got to talk about it because I've really enjoyed this season and really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. I am glad that so far we are, is this 4 episodes into the season? 4, right? I am not weary of talking about the show yet. And that I remember was around midway last season. I was like getting that way. Oh, by the way, speaking of Noah Hawley and whatever, I've been hearing some more things about Fargo. which I'm so looking forward to. I don't know how many folks out there know about what's going to happen in the next season of Fargo. So just a couple little things. Don't know if y'all know it's going to take place in around 1950. So they're going way back in time for the next season of Fargo. Chris Rock is going to be one of the main, or the main character. It's going to be dealing with a couple opposing crime families. I think one, well, one's with Chris Rock, so guess what? One's African American. And the other, I'm trying to remember, either Italian or Irish. I'm kind of forgetting which it was now, because I wasn't planning to mention this. It's one or the other. They've been adding a bunch of people to the cast. Again, it's a just like the previous three seasons of Fargo, it's shaping up to be a very eclectic mix of actors and people who are like Chris Rock, who are generally known more for comedy, but it's going to be kind of interesting to see them playing in the play box of Noah Hawley's Fargo. So I'm looking forward to that, although obviously I do not believe that'll be until sometime next year. All the good stuff we're waiting for is next year. Better Call Saul, Fargo. Don't know what we're going to talk about once Legion and Manhunter and everything drops, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I was going to say not all the good stuff. We still have Mindhunter, but
Yes, that's coming. I guess they actually announced
next
the
month.
date. Yeah, it's August. I think it's mid-August, like August 16th or something. I did not write down the date. It's coming in August. We will definitely be doing that. Mindhunter is one of my favorite series of the last couple of years. I am dying to see the second season. I know stuff about it, and there's stuff I don't know, which I'm just intrigued to see if they're going to go where I think they're going to go. I think I might have made some predictions at the very end of the podcast we did a couple of years ago. Very much looking forward to that one. Probably more so than anything other than. Oh, and the final season of Mr. Robot's coming this fall. So kind of looking forward to that as well. We're not going to podcast about it, but I'm still looking forward to it. Anyway, all right. So, Brian, again, thank you so much for co-hosting and look forward to hanging out and talking to you next week.
Yeah, I look forward to talking to you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So, with that, good night to you and good night to you guys out there.
Good night.